Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bald Move Television Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
It's too much TV. I'm Jim.
And we are, again, giving ultimate respect to Sharp Objects by collapsing our coverage down to a single show. It's a massive, massive show of respect for what's been one of my favorite shows of the year so far. Jim, did the finale satisfy you?
99% satisfied by the finale, yeah. I thought it was really, really good.
Walter White could scarcely do better. He could do a tenth of a point better, perhaps.
Right. And he's a professional. I'm not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought, you know, we got everything that I wanted a resolution for. I will say I have some questions that I wish were more concretely answered, but maybe in retrospect, thinking about it, they'll make more sense.
Yeah, I kind of liked how I firmly believe that I feel like this is the first time I sat down and watched, Inception. I walked out of the theater thinking, I think there are all the clues here to understand everything that I just saw in context. Mm-hmm. I don't even know that I need to see the whole thing again. But I feel like, yeah, they didn't spell it out. They kind of gave you one glimpse, you know, through the lens of Camille and her experiences with WinGap, of what all caused this to happen and why Emma acted the way she did.
Yeah.
But there isn't. And I feel like that mirrors real life tragedies because, you know, even when like, you know, gunman shoots up a place or they catch a mass murderer like Charles Manson, does anything they say make anything that they do make sense?
And I mean, crazy people are going to be crazy, right?
Right. So hurt people are going to hurt. Crazy people are going to be crazy. I felt like it mirrors real life. It's the frustration of not getting a pat answer, and some things are not going to make sense in retrospect.
And I think they really did enough with talking about Adora and her mom, and you know, Adora and Camille's relationship, that you could see where that would get passed down another generation.
Yeah.
And maybe not in the exact same way.
Right.
Like, I don't think Adora's mom was just like Adora, but, and therefore I don't think Emma has to be just like her mother, but, you kind of get a sense of, okay, well, the damage that has been done to Adora is going to be handed down and it's going to manifest itself in a weird way, which here is killing and turning floors into teeth, which, can I just say, I think you get one more internet point for that.
I'm up to 9, but they depreciated again, so I think I'm down to 6.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous call. You must be sneaking excerpts from the book.
Now, see, I have been accused of that this week. I will say that, I have really tried very hard to avoid any kind of book spoiler contamination to the point of avoiding our forum threads and Reddit, and I've let my wife, Cecily, compile all the feedback this season. So, I mean, the thing is this is why I think internet points are silly, because I predicted that the teeth would be like in the dollhouse would be some kind of pivotal moment in the investigation, like some kind of like real turning point in the case. I predicted that Detective Harris and Chief Vickers would be speeding over to the Adora compound. And what was surreal for me is like at the 59 minute mark, the teeth were nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, because I didn't really give a shit either way. But then it's like, oh, by the way, P.S. Aaron was right. Uh-huh. At the very end there.
On this one thing, right? You're talking about the shotgun approach, right? Where you just make a whole bunch of predictions.
Yeah.
And eventually you're going to hit something and it's going to be so obscure. It's like, holy shit.
One aspect of it came, but I didn't, I didn't anticipate it being literal, like recognizable teeth. I thought they would be worked in the square. Yeah. Like I said on the forum, I'm kind of shocked at 15-year-old Emma's craftsmanship.
Yeah, no, it's an impressive thing.
I thought that, because like I said, that stuff, and then I started thinking about that talking with you and talking to Cecily. It's like, you know, the weird obsession with the ivory and how it's kind of taboo and you can't get that anymore. And Emma's like misplaced kind of rage about like when the house didn't match up exactly the specifications to the Adora house. And like Camille kind of being weirdly fixated with the dollhouse. It's not really clear to me why she went and investigated the dollhouse in this episode, to be honest. But yeah, no, I lucked into something.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, you know, you were talking about how the show kind of hints at things, and keeps things not connecting all the dots all the time. And I think that's what makes it pay off at the end when the big Amma reveal comes. Cause you can kind of look back and say, okay, there are some dots that maybe I didn't recognize as dots, beforehand, but they're never, and that's the thing that keeps the investigation fresh too. You know, it's this idea of, well, these things could mean something or they could mean nothing, right? Like the ivory floor, it could be thematic or it could just be Adora being weird, you know, and precious about her fancy floor.
Right.
So I really liked it. I love how they wrapped that up and kept everything kind of nebulous until the end.
Hey, before we do a deep dive on the episode, I want to talk about what's going on here at Bald Move. Of course, we've got the Better Call Saul podcast that's raging through season 4 right now. We're also doing Instant Talk podcast, much like our Instant Take podcasts. We do 15, 20 minutes of our opinion on episode, and then we host people's live chat on YouTube to let them, our club members, participate in asking questions and making comments. We're also rolling through season 3 of Game of Thrones. I think we only got 3 more episodes left. We just really gunned through that. It's been so good, too. If you want to catch up with us on Game of Thrones, you can hit us over there. We're seeing The Little Stranger, a gothic horror film, this weekend, starring Admiral Hux from the Star Wars trilogy. We also released a new commission podcast, A Few Good Men, this week, commissioned by our buddy Sean Ray. And don't forget, on Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/baldmove, for this week, anyway, we're watching some classic 80s and early 90s movies. I've selected for this Tuesday The Last Starfighter. Jim selected Lawnmower Man for Thursday. And don't forget, if you can't see it live, you can watch it, the live watch, for 14 days. You can watch these movies with us for 14 days on twitch.tv/baldmove. Or if you're a club member, they're a regular club feature. Finally, if you are an HBO subscriber, which you probably are listening to this podcast, and you're wondering, oh man, where do I go from here? Might I suggest David Simon's The Deuce? A look at, you know, like he does, corruption at big city levels, the burgeoning kind of porn, prostitution, drug, disco, rave scene in New York City in the 70s. It's great. I love the period setting. I love the acting. I love the material. We're going to be starting doing that on Bald Move TV this year feed. The Deuce starts September 9th, so we'll be covering it September 11th. Let's talk about the episode.
What do you think about, like, the scenes where Camille comes home after figuring this thing out about her mother? Did you think that those were, like, she made the appropriate moves there, or?
I thought it's interesting because it reminded me a lot, this talk about, like, you know, at the end where Camille's kind of wrapping things up in her piece, and she's doing this incredibly personal thing, and, you know, she talked about how the only thing Adora is guilty of is this very feminine type of rage. And it reminds me of, like, you know, what, like, Brienne of Tarth says about Catelyn in season 2, I think, of Game of Thrones, where it's like, you know, she's trying to pay her a compliment. And she's like, you're courageous, like maybe not a man's type, but like a woman's type of courage. And like you fight a woman's type of fight. I felt like that this was the attempt of having, like, a big confrontation, but have it not be punches and guns drawn and dishes smashed, like some kind of, like, weird nonviolent Gandhi type of confrontation with the mother, hoping that her sister could find the strength to save them both.
Yeah, I think so. I agree that could be what they're doing here. I guess I just didn't like it because it didn't quite seem like a feasible plan. Like she goes in here, who is the healthy one in this room, right? It's Camille at the moment. Who's the one who could immediately now go get some help for her sister? It's Camille. But Camille puts herself out of commission and hopes that Amma will be with it enough to actually get out of the house and even want to get out of the house, which turns out she doesn't. Well, I mean, feel like there are a million ways this could have gone, and she took, like, a really fucking risky option.
No, I think this is the equivalent of, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger putting the gun down. You know, and like, and come on, don't you want it to come on? You want to give me the blue, don't you, Bennett? Come on.
Yeah.
You want to see, I feel like, yeah, it was that, like the feminine equivalent of that. And kind of intentionally so, that she would have to take her mom down in that kind of way. And I felt like they did a pretty good job at the dinner scene of having like her and Camille, Amma and Camille kind of invisibly communicating, like, yeah, I want to do this St. Louis thing. I want to get away from this. Mm-hmm. I want to, leading her to believe that the Amma would be on board. Like, as soon as, like if Camille could take a couple of doses away from Amma, yeah, she could get her wits together and do it. And then the thing that I want to know is, would Amma have snuck out, put her skates on, rolled into town, got Detective Harris, had not Alan been, hey, here's some cake, and this is not the time to interject yourself. Like, it did seem like she was going to go through with the plan, but she just could not deal with any.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is like, you know, but here, I do think that I've seen some opposing takes in the finale that are essentially the thing with Gillian Flynn is that you get caught up in the narrative. And then this crazy reveal and you walk out and like your head's on fire and you're like, oh, my God, I can't. But then you start thinking individually how this stuff fits together in a lot. And it feels like a little bit like smoke in your hands. You're trying to collect it up.
I think I'm OK with that, though. That's kind of the part I like about this show.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's things I don't like about the direction that the show took. But that's what it is. It's my personal preference. Like, my personal preference would be for Adora just to be an awful mom in the way that these crazy-ass narcissists are. The fact that she has to be a man-child's mom is just like, I felt almost gilding the villain Lily. I kind of wish that this family had nothing to do with the larger murders. But I can't say that the show didn't earn the ending it got, and I liked what I got. It just wasn't what I was expecting, and wasn't necessarily what I thought I wanted. Mm-hmm. But I can definitely see people like, you know, there's a lot of like, how in the world can these 3 15-year-old girls commit a murder, multiple murders over less than a year's span, and have no one be the wiser? And I guess you just have to really buy into and wind gap. These women are invisible as far as like they're just all put on these pedestals and yet scorned at the same time.
Yeah.
So like
they do a lot of early track laying for that.
Yeah.
In this series.
Yeah. But I also have questions about like, you know, how was Ashley involved? Who bit her ear off? It doesn't seem it doesn't seem like she was involved in the inner circle, but like Amma was still gunning for her boyfriend. Like there's a lot of weird stuff I don't understand. And there's also a lot of like realizing how villainous Anna was, or Amma, how insane she was, that I kind of after the last episode or two was expecting it all to go be Adora's fault. And it was truly shocking at the end when you found out like that mid-credit sequence of her like the killing the three girls.
Yeah.
Just the absolute savagery. What do you think of this? What do you think of this young actor? I forget her name. The 18, maybe 19-year-old that played her.
Playing Amma?
Yeah, I'll look her up while you're...
No, I think she's good. She's actually British. I found out when I watched the post-credits.
Australian. Sequence.
Australian?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Huh. She sounded British, I guess. Okay,
well, Australian. I mean, yeah, they kind of do. Eliza Scanlon. I could see her... This seems like kind of a breakout role.
Yeah.
But... I don't know.
Especially on a premiere channel like HBO.
Yeah.
Premiere Network.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought she was really good at playing both sweet and vulnerable and also sadistic and crazy.
Yeah, and there's a... You know, it's interesting because I felt continually like this is a secular horror story. Mm. Like, there are some aspects... Like, I kind of smiled when they show... Camille walking up to the house and she's having all these conversations about her sister and about like maybe when you die part of you goes to heaven, part of you stays here to see what happens to you and mama, and then the frame falls off towards the end. I'm like, are they going to do some kind of you know, what lies beneath bullshit, where there's like some kind of hint that a ghost saved the day or a ghost revealed something, or but no, they didn't. But that was I felt like, and maybe I'm crazy because you're looking at me like I'm crazy.
I just didn't know the reference.
But you know, it's like I felt like even to the almost the last frame that there was a threat of paranormal, which I kind of enjoyed as like that little horror juice. Like, you know, Camille's such an unstuck in time character, and she's, you know, looking over and seeing her dead sister, and then she looks back and it's her young self, and you know that this isn't something she's gone through before. This is just how she's visualizing it. That it felt very kind of trippy and like that thin place, that thin veil between life and death might be pierced. I liked how that seemed to be, you know, with the woman in white, even that creepy last shot of the reveal of Amma being the woman in white.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty horrific. I don't know. Like I would love to see her in like the latest Conjuring. Cause I think she's just a fundamentally creepy person.
So did you watch the interviews after the credits
with like the director and stuff?
Okay. Cause the number one, I guess, minor complaint that I would have with this ending is that it is so sudden and it doesn't actually tell you anything about Amma's motivation. It doesn't tell you why she did it at all. And in fact, when I went and I watched the post-credit sequence and they were interviewing the director, he said that she did it because she was jealous of the two girls, Anne and Natalie, who were getting attention from Adora. That had not really entered my mind as part of the equation.
Oh, really?
No.
Because I thought that them showing Amma's inappropriate reaction to... was it Olivia? Who was her friend that she met and she murders at the very end of it? May. I thought when they showed May, like the fact that, you know, May presented this nice blanket to Camille for the dollhouse, and like Amma, you see it thrown away in the trash, and then Amma saying, "You're only saying that to suck up to my sister." Like you could see. And then she later murders that. Like, I think they're teaching you that, like, oh, the same thing happened when Adora took an interest in these two willful children. And
now that, I guess.
And then that's also why, because I suspected Adora of being, of having bad motives mentoring these two girls. But I think you're supposed to understand that, I mean, Adora is crazy. And she's definitely a Manchausen mom. But I kind of think that Marion's death was an accident. Like, I don't think she intended. I think that she just fucked up the dose, you know? Like, and I think she was genuinely, like, that's the thing that also kind of made sense, snapped into place, that, like, and like her, like her, like Alan saying, like, hey, you know, take it easy. You don't want this, like, man, fucking Alan, we got to talk about him in a minute.
We will.
But I that Adora was trying to connect to these girls who reminded her of her daughter, and if she could redeem them, then that was somehow kind of redemption for her.
I don't know. It's hard for me to ascribe any positive motive to Adora whatsoever.
Oh, yeah.
Or to say that she didn't kill her daughter on purpose, because she clearly is trying to kill Camille in this episode.
Well,
without
no,
a doubt. She brings her bottle after bottle after bottle, knowing what this is doing to her.
But that's
what, and Alan warns her, stop doing this. Right, it's too much. And she continues to do it, preparing more bottles.
But like Richard said, there's the idea that Amma had built up this tolerance to this stuff over doing this for years, that she just didn't account for the fact that Camille would not have the tolerance for this stuff. Because, like, again, and here's the thing, and we got a little bit of feedback on it. Like, these Manchows and moms, do they actually know that they're doing bad things, or do they think that some sort of medicine? Like, I don't know. It's like a cult leader. Do they really believe that their God is real, or do they know that it's a con? Like, I don't know at what point it becomes academic, but I'm not saying that Adora is a sympathetic character. I'm just saying
I think her symptoms should have told her everything. Like, Camille can't move, can't get out of bed, can't walk.
Right.
She backs off when Amma gets that way, right?
Yeah.
She doesn't quite push her to the point of being absolutely bedridden. Camille, she keeps pushing and pushing and pushing. And I don't know if it's because she views this as her one chance to, you know, this opportunity may never come again. and so she wants to milk it for all it's worth and simply might get carried away here, or if she's intentionally trying to kill her. But honestly, when I look at Adora, I think she's trying to kill Camille.
Well, it's so funny because I feel like I'm arguing against that, even though that is exactly what I thought was the motivation last episode. Like, I really think in her perfect world, both of her daughters would die. And then I don't know what she does after that. I also think it's weird that...
to them.
So, do you think that Adora knew that Amma killed those other two girls?
No. I think Adora is somehow oblivious to her daughter's actions.
So she's taking the fall for those other two to protect Amma because she thinks... Does she know...
No, she pled not guilty. I don't believe she's taking the fall. I think the evidence has connected it to her circumstantially, and that's enough to put her away for those murders.
Right.
Because she's already a murderer, you know? It's like,
well, if she can
do Munchausen on her daughters, can she pull the teeth out of a girl's head? Sure.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's a pretty easy thing for a jury to leap to.
Yeah, no, I think that now that, like, Amma has been uncovered, I mean, that's the thing, I guess, that's we debated about whether, you know, how far do you get along, like, the Amma continuum before you're lost, you're too gone, and, like, clearly she is. Like, I don't think Amma's ever getting out of at least a insane asylum, you know?
Do we even know that they solved those murders, that's what she was charged with?
Who?
Adora.
Yeah. Richard said that. Well, he said they found the pliers. Yeah. They were covered in blood.
We think
they matched a prints on the girl's teeth and gums.
Uh-huh.
Maybe Alan's an accomplice, but he said we're probably going to charge your mom.
Right.
So,
but definitely, I would think they could charge her with Munchausen.
Oh yeah, like that seems open and shut. And I don't know how long you can go away for that, but
yeah. You're definitely going to prison for at least a while. That's murder.
Yeah, no, that's for sure
and attempted murder. I mean, she essentially tried to kill Amma and Camille, so there's two counts there, right?
Yeah. But that's the thing is, like, there's also, I don't know, because like, it seems like from Camille's final kind of summary to the editor or whatever, her final piece, that, like, her mom's going to get the book thrown at her, and she said something about my mom has many years. Like, to me, it seems like it was written after she's been found guilty and she's been put away. I don't know on what counts, but so, yeah, that seems like, I mean, that's the thing. This really left, like, we're talking about, and if we released a podcast for A Few Good Men. Yeah. We talked about how that podcast, like that on that podcast, how that movie climaxes with the "you can't handle the truth." You know, you're goddamn right. I did it, and I do it again. And then the movie kind of like trips over its dick for the next 10 minutes because it didn't know it's already climaxed, and it's just embellishing. This was like, I felt like it moved halfway through Jack Nicholson say, "You're goddamn right," and it just faded to black.
Yeah,
like.
And then 10, 15 seconds into the credits, I did.
Yeah.
but not even. And then it cuts again.
Right. It's like they really, and I think sometimes shows can get away with, you know, really leaving them wanting more. I mean, people in the forums are kind of tongue in cheek, but kind of not saying, like, I would be in for a season two, like the previous generation, Adora and Lovey or whatever the fuck her name was, the old witch of Wind Gap, a set in the 70s, seeing like teenage Adora and her mom, and I'm like, yeah, I guess I could too, but there is a charm in like leaving the audience breathless and just like, nope, you're hot and bothered, and I'm not gonna touch you no more.
And there's a charm in not forcing a continuation of a story that is intended to end,
right?
I don't know that I want to necessarily say, hey, Gillian Flynn, now you got to go back, since this was a big success on TV. You got to go back and write season two.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you get True Detective season two.
Right. Especially when it gets rushed out. But I, there's a lot of little questions I have, like, what exactly did happen at the hunting lodge with Camille? What all went down there, and like, why, what led to the cutting? When did it start? When did it stop? You know, who killed the teenage lesbian lovers? Was that like something that Adora did in much the same way that Amma did? Like, who, why? One of the evidence I thought her mom was involved is the fact that she painted the girl's fingernails. But I saw online someone speculated that. So I guess the book includes like a whole chapter devoted to Camille just telling the reader everything. Like, Amma's stated motivations, and, like, they just, like, really do a blow-by-blow and, like, just resolve the fuck out of everything.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So
well, that's not in the show.
And I think I read somewhere that, like, that Amma painted the fingernails because she knew those girls would hate it.
Hmm.
And you're supposed to kind of draw a parallel between that and Marion, like Camille's rage at Marion being all dolled up for the funeral, because that's I guess I thought that Marion was the kind of girl that would wear rouge and lipstick if her mom wanted her to, because she just wanted to be a good girl to her detriment. She'll drink as much of that shit as you put in front of her.
Right.
But there's a lot of those little questions that I guess I feel like it feels real. That's how a real investigation kind of goes. You're not going, especially when you're dealing with like really criminal insanity, you're not going to get good answers for everything.
I mean, I guess the biggest question I had at the end was Ashley. What did Ashley have to do with any of this?
Yeah.
Because they don't show her. I freeze framed those final scenes. They don't ever show her at the scene of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly she knew about it. Because mm-hmm. she saw the blood, she could point the detective to it. She knew that it was going to be Natalie's, that kind of thing. She knew that the murder happened
in
her pool house.
It happened in that pool house, right.
Yeah, so what was her involvement?
I want to say that, like, her younger, like, so I think she's an upperclassman. Like, her, mm-hmm. like, she's a senior. John graduated a year before.
Yeah.
And Am is, like, a freshman. So, like, I think Jodes is maybe her sister. So okay. Ashley wasn't involved in the murder, and mm-hmm. whether she knew about it or not, I'm not sure. But she knew that maybe she thought John was guilty, and she was cleaning that up to try to.
Well, I mean, the fact that you say maybe she thought with a question mark at the end is the problem I have with it. Is
yeah,
I want to know those things, and the show doesn't want me to know them.
Yeah, there just seems like massive amounts of like the drama school teacher, red herring, Bob Nash, red herring, John Keane, red herring. And I guess, like I said, that feels cool. That's the same reason I think mm-hmm. a lot of people like George Martin, because you'll go down these garden paths thinking, oh, this is the one true savior. Nope, they just died, or they just like, you know, think threads get dropped. How do you think things were left with Richard and Camille?
This is weird because Richard, so I don't think they have a relationship. I think Richard is pretty bummed still about, you know, the whole John thing.
Yeah.
And just Camille's, I don't know, betrayal of his trust in general.
Mm-hmm.
But he is so incredibly complacent when he finds out about Adora's Munchausen by proxy.
What do you mean by
that?
He's
complacent. He doesn't go and actually, like, try to investigate that at all beyond figuring out, oh, she does this. She probably killed her daughter. And then he just kind of lets it drop.
Yeah, well, he goes out there and checks, and this is where Alan, what a piece of shit he is. Because I think he went from plausible deniability to active malice and cover-up when he turns up the music and goes to the door and completely blows a smokescreen for his wife. Especially mm-hmm. in the context of him saying, hey, don't overdo this. Like, I know what you're... I mean, I fucking can't get in the headspace of that guy. This woman is murdering my children, whom I love. And I'm going to be like, well, this is your area.
Which makes me wonder, is he part of it or not?
Right.
Does he actually know what she's doing or not?
Right.
Surely he's got to see the signs, right?
Man, I don't know. I can't give a satisfying answer to that because it seems... I mean, I know there are guys like that, but it's just very hard for me to get into a headspace where I can start to sympathize with them. Like, what the fuck is his damage? Like, I can sympathize almost more with Adora because, like, she's just paying down generations of shit rolling downhill. Mm-hmm. What did Alan grow up with a domineering mother that, you know, gave him bleach enemas whenever she caught him with an erection, or like, I don't know.
That's good.
Like, if we saw the other side of him, maybe we'd be more sympathetic to him, but he just seems like a giant piece of shit.
Right. We don't know anything about Alan.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
Yeah. Like, to know that's going on and to excuse it because you have this infantile relationship with your wife,
And it actually kind of surprised me when Camille walks in the door and she's reluctant to sit down at the table, and he's like, sit.
Yeah, no, I like...
he tells her to fucking sit, and I'm like, that's Alan?
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah, and it, like, how it kind of, like, compelled... the power of Ellen or Alan compelled Camille to sit down. Like, it's such a weird scene. Such a weird scene. But
it is, and he's a weird character.
It's and like the whole family dynamics just makes her skin crawl. Mm-hmm. Like, just so many things. Like when her, like, you know, when she's like, I think it's so gross that there are people who have adults or children and they want to keep them as babies. Mm-hmm. To the degree that Adora is ready to believe that Camille is going to be like, can I have some more, Mom? Like, doing like the little girl voice. Yeah. Like, how the fuck does Adora not get that this is a put on?
Right.
Like, it's really... stretches my credulity, but I do believe there are people like this that exist, that they're just so fucking backwards about how the world works, that when the world finally conforms to their weirdo notion of how it should be, it's like, well, finally, you know, it's a bad goddamn time I got the respect I was due, and you treat me like the mother I deserve to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the same reason that people who fall for, like, Nigerian email scams fall for them, because this is kind of the thing they've always dreamed of, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I could be rich?
Yeah.
I could be rich? Yes, please, just tell me how and I'll do it.
Right, right. Especially if there's a little bit of, like, man in iron mask intrigue and...
Right.
You know,
so now, you know, Adora looks at that and said, this is what I've always wanted. I've wanted Camille to need me, to love me, you know, to give me the opportunity to do the thing I do. The thing that I crave. And so she took it blindly.
I tell you what, I really liked the interrogation of John.
Yes.
Like, I felt like this actor was kind of all over the place in terms of, like, I was sympathetic to his situation, and long ago I decided he hadn't killed those girls, but like, I didn't like this felt very real. Like, this is now an 18-year-old man who is waking up to the cosmic injustice of going to life in prison over something he didn't do, and his sister's murderer yet walks free. Mm-hmm. Like the sheer shock of that, like, shook him out of his kind of nihilism he's going through last episode. And that thing where he's like, you know, cry shouting, if you want to say it was me, you can probably get away with it, but you'd be so fucking wrong. I thought was, like, really affecting.
It was. Yeah. I like that scene a lot. And then, you know, Richard coming out of that and having that discussion with Chief Vickers, who wants to push him, and he's saying, yeah, he'll tell you anything you want if you push him hard enough.
Right.
Even if he didn't do it.
Yeah.
It's...
Going to lean on a monotalk style.
And then the arrest, like, the actual arrest of Adora was tragically hilarious.
Right.
I don't know, like, her just, like, crying, oh, they're gonna, I don't want, oh, what about my dignity, you know? Yeah, like, that kind of shit.
Tough.
When,
oh,
you're being
really
handcuffed for killing your children.
Yeah,
it's fucking repulsive.
Yeah. And
disgusting.
And what Alan was playing, like, is this really necessary? Like, yeah. Man, it's just, I don't know, man, there's a special level of oblivious for someone who can, I mean, that's what, it's not even oblivious, because they know what's going on, but they're in such denial. I thought that...
They, like, think it's not as serious as it is, or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, like, I mean, Camille was wrong about the exact thing she's saying it about, but, like, the way these narcissists operate, where, like, anything that doesn't fit in their worldview that they do, they just ignore.
Yeah.
Like they have this 1984 style cognitive dissonance that, like, I am an excellent mother and my children need me, and, oh, also it's an open secret between me and my mate that I killed one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah, fucked up.
What the fuck? Like, that's job number one, is don't be directly contributing to the death of your children. Like,
as a parent, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's kind of the first mission. Keep, like, when they're babies, keep them from trying to kill themselves. When they get old, like, try to, like, you know, catch and gently release them into the wild. It's an art. But she, like, if you're fucking killing them just for show, you're definitely doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. And even Chief Vickers seemed a little reluctant to arrest Adora.
No, I did.
It was fucking weird.
I was so surprised at how passive the men were.
Yeah.
Like, Vickers is like, sick, huh? And he's making those connections, but And then Richard said, you know, Chief Vickers wasn't wanting to hear it from me, but then when your editor Curry comes down and raises all kind of hell, like, I guess I read that situation wrong. I thought that Chief was starting. I thought him and Detective Harris both would storm the gates, but
right.
Like, I thought it was also weird that, you know, Richard was so easily rebuffed by Alan. By fucking Alan. Oh, yeah, she's out with her friends, but her car's right here.
Yeah, I think he kept... Yeah, I guess he didn't keep prowling. I kept expecting, like, Camille to crawl her way to that window that Richard was standing at with Adora.
Yeah.
And he'd look up and see her there.
He has to fall naked, tumble naked out of the window.
into the rose bushes.
Into the rose bush.
Yeah. But that didn't happen. Yeah, I guess... So he went away at that point and tried to rouse Chief Vickers.
Yeah.
And Vickers wasn't having it, but coincidentally, Curry
came down there with the wrath of the newspaper.
Which, I guess, you know, he got her in this situation. It's about time he did something to get her out of it.
But there's another question I have. Richard, after he gets rebuffed by Alan, Alan's playing goalie for his wife's fucking murder ambitions. Mm-hmm. Richard goes to the town bar, and he's just looking around, and he's seeing stuff. But that... It didn't lead him to, like, redouble. Like, I thought it's like, oh, well, he's going to see something there that's going to have him turn on to cherries and berries. But no, it's all Curry. Like, what the
That's
fuck?
Why I say, like, he's so complacent. Maybe what happened is he went from Dora's house to Chief Vickers. Vickers said, nah, we're not going to do anything about that. Then he goes to the bar.
Uh-huh.
And he's kind of looking around going, ugh. I guess I failed here.
Yeah.
And then Curry shows up. I don't know.
But all as far as how they left things, I thought that... was pretty good that Richard essentially said, hey, I'm really sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You're clearly in a lot of pain or going through a lot. And, you know, Camille also saying, hey, I didn't exactly handle myself appropriately either. I thought that was a great adult way for them to kind of, like, go their separate ways. Because, like,
yeah.
I can't imagine that, you know, Kansas City and St. Louis is ever going to get together. And then that's before the AMA situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck does Camille do with herself? Like, you can see that she is using the surrogate relationship with Amma as a way to kind of, like, justify her continued existence.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've jettisoned this guilt I feel for not being able to save my sister by raising the other one. I guess this is direct quotes from the source material, and they're passing it off as, like, you know, this column that she's writing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, like, when Curry says, like, this is beautiful, kid... I thought it's rare. Usually when I see, like, in Matt, you know, examples of supposedly superior commercials, superior songs. I mean, do we need to talk about We Are All Everybody?
You All Everybody.
You All Everybody.
Charlie's.
Like usually when you see something that's supposed to be good, it's like, well, it's a script writer's idea of what's good. If they mm-hmm. were a star, like, unless you're Donald Glover, it's very unlikely you're going to write a fucking awesome spec script and a great rap song and, you know, be a brilliant stand-up. But this is actually, I guess it's because Gillian Flynn is a writer, and she's mm-hmm. also a reporter. She did a fucking great job.
Yeah, I was Curry in that scene. I was kind of blown away by the article that Camille writes at the end there.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
I just thought that whole kind of eulogy, that felt like the ending, and then,
all it took for her to write that beautiful story, by the way, was for her sister to die, her to almost die, and find out her mother is a murderer.
Right.
If she could just find that inspiration again.
Yeah.
Which I think she found it, right? Like, at the end of this, if she wants to go write another killer story, she's got...
I mean, she's definitely got a...
She's got the ammo.
She's definitely got... Yeah, the ammo. Uh-huh. Ammo. She's definitely got a solid act, too, to mm-hmm. write up. Because, like, my God, what a fucking... Like, what point do you start accusing the writer of making shit up?
Yeah, that's a fair question.
Like, Jesus Christ. I would read the shit out of this article series, you know?
She's definitely got an Empire Strikes Back on her hands. Now, if she can... write just a killer suicide note, she'll have Return of the Jedi.
Right.
Get that published. Her obituary.
Yeah, but I just thought, like, you know, and the fact that there's a couple other things. when Camille is talking to Amma for like one of the first times, Amma's wearing this floral print dress and she says, "I'm just Mama's doll that she likes to dress up." And someone pointed out that her new friend May is wearing that exact dress before Amma kills her. Like that she has now fully put on the Amma or she's put on the Adora persona. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like I said, I thought the fact that they were actually recognizably teeth used in those tiles was like fucking horrific.
It was.
And how, I mean, someone also mentioned that like a couple of episodes ago, you can see her like scrubbing, like polishing the floor, and like that she was probably trying to grind that stuff smooth mm-hmm. right in front of her face.
And it also makes sense now in retrospect why she was so protective of the dollhouse.
Yeah.
You know, why she crawled back into bed when Adora threatened to get rid of it.
Right.
That kind of thing.
I mean, I don't think it's even like just the evidence. I think it's like that is such a totem for her.
Exactly. Yeah.
Of her power and the relationship with her mother. And, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about how people can just get from an early age think that they can't do any wrong, and they get so late in life before they find out where the edge between right and wrong is. And I think definitely Amma is one of those people that, you know, Camille finds out that she's murdered three girls, and her first response is, "Don't tell Mama."
Yeah.
Like, fuck your mom. She's in federal penitentiary. You better worry that I go run and tell the judge, you know?
Yeah.
But I thought that, and the just absolute savage, like the way they depicted the murders was just perfect. It was like the desperation and fear of the girls and just the utter savagery of Amma and her pack of girls. We didn't talk about that. I don't think we gave it the actual consideration it merits. The girls conspiring to murder these two women. Mm-hmm. Is that believable to you?
Sure. I've seen Heathers.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, it's also kind of like, if you don't believe this, then what do you think of the Slender Man case? Now, those girls were quickly found out, but that's because they didn't finish the job. The victim survived and was able to get help. That girl died. Are they the town going to suspect the 12 and 13-year-old girls first?
Probably not.
I mean, like, yeah, I do think that if you want to be a female serial killer and you're 13 to 16, you could probably drop a lot of bodies before people would even start to look your way. If you were even at all careful.
Got
to
cover your tracks, though. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially if your mom is Adora. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, shit. How many real life examples of plot armor do we need to see where, like, people, important people or rich, powerful people just have a different experience with the justice system and everything? So, yeah, I there's a lot of ambiguity and a lot of things left up to people to kind of judge for themselves. But I thought that was of a piece of the whole work and really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. I think coming out of this final episode, I felt like the entire series was engrossing and really just kept me thrilled the whole time.
Yeah.
I never felt like there was a dull episode, really.
Mm-mm.
Like
everything.
Calhoun Day, I guess, was as close as it comes, but
not me, man.
Even then, yeah. I enjoyed that episode. So, yeah.
In the moment of watching that, there was just so much dread and menace. Like the fact that nothing happened sometimes, I think, was beside the point because you felt like something could, and you know, at the end of the day, like that's tension, and that's, you know, that's manipulating that in an audience is an art. Like I said, this is the best kind of, I guess, psychological or secular kind of horror story I've ever seen, because it does feel like it could happen. Like,
sure,
you know, it plays on elemental fears of the absolute power that parents have over children and what your parents can do through no fault of your own to like have devastating impacts on on your adult life. Hit pretty close to home for me. Do you have anything more you want to say about this?
Nope.
Let me ask you this. What are you thinking? Because I remember we opened the door to we might do like maybe a series wrap up. But I feel like now that I've seen it, there's not a lot to debate. There's certainly people can have opinions on motivations and exact things. And like, you know, on second watches, look at all this foreshadowing with Amma and all that kind of stuff. But like, I don't know it warrants a follow up.
Yeah, I don't really think so. All the questions that I have are kind of raised by, you know, this final episode, and so we talked about a lot of them, like Ashley's connection and stuff like that.
How about this as a suggestion?
Yeah.
We said that we'd watch two more episodes of Castle Rock and talk about that. How about next week we do that, and then if there's significant feedback, we can consider that as part of that podcast.
Okay. Do like a mini wrap-up, yeah.
Bald Move TV will have, because I know we also got some feedback on Castle Rock. We can consider that, talk about our thoughts on Castle Rock up through the current episode, and then if there is some Sharp Objects feedback left to clean up, we can do that. All right, before we get the feedback, do a short, sweet ad placement for Club Bald Move. This is how we get support. This is how we're able to do shows like the Sharp Objects and Deduce, because we do this full time, and we're able to do that because of generous support by our listeners. And it's, again, not all just altruism. You get a lot of features for your money. If you go to club.baldmove.com, you can sample some of these features, see the things we offer, like ad-free feeds, VIP access to the forums, bonus audio and video content. You can sample it, and hey, you can sign up and try for free 30 days just for signing up at club.baldmove.com. All right. TV@baldmove.com is how you want to send that feedback in. Let's get to it. Now, this next few pieces of feedback are stuff that was sent in before the finale episode. Let's begin with Hannah. I know there's a lot of feedback and concerns on the forum and podcast about reporting suspicions of man-child by proxy. As a former investigator for the state of Missouri, this is like right up your alley, Hannah. I can tell you this is absolutely something that Child Protective Services should be involved in. Yes, it's very difficult to get action on and prove, but what becomes important in these cases is establish a pattern of behavior. Building a case requires that people report their suspicions so that a history and pattern can be established. Also, doctors, medical staff, law enforcement, teachers, and social service providers are all mandated reporters. They see these patterns or are made aware of these patterns. They are required by law to report them. And I would highly encourage anyone concerned about child abuse or safety of the child to report this immediately. Reports can be made anonymously in every state. However, reporters' identity is protected by law, and providing as much information to an investigator is always helpful. Annie B. chimes in and says, for someone who suspects man-child abuse, get the insurance company involved if possible. Report the abuser for insurance fraud. Though this would not work for the Preakers, advantage enough to pay out of their own pocket. Often I would imagine health coverage is defrauded in Munchausen activity. If you suspect someone close to you, report possible fraud to the insurance company, and they will investigate.
They have a financial incentive to.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then Dr. Cynthia, who's the same doctor wrote in about narcissism a few weeks ago, said the very best thing for you to do is, if you suspect of man-child by proxy, is contact a child's school. Reach out to the school social worker first or the school psychologist. Both are what we call mandated reporters, which means they are federally and state mandated report to suspicion to a child welfare agency. Hmm. They're also more likely to have information about the illnesses, absences, or behavior of the child. You can also report to CPS with the following lines: 1-800-4-A-CHILD. You can also go to childhelp.org/hotline. So those are several different avenues of anonymous ways you can help children. Because I didn't have a great answer, and I appreciate you guys stepping forward and helping us out there.
Well, I disagree with all of that. I think what you should actually do...
respect the parents' authority.
Go into their house, sit down for a meal, and fake a stomach ache. Yeah. And you will find out whether or not it's Munchausen by proxy.
Sure. It helps to be the long, estranged black sheep daughter.
It does. But I think you could still just... maybe if it's Thanksgiving time, you could get in there for a meal.
Oh, yeah. Mariko, you raised a question in last week's episode of why women don't commit as many violent crimes as men. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on a subject, but I can offer some insight onto the other side, having, you know, grown up as a girl. Generally speaking, girls are taught to be, through social mores, to be quiet and agreeable, whereas boys are encouraged to express themselves or explore their individuality. I think this is a telling reason for why more men are found to commit violent crimes than women. It's not that the urges aren't there in women for any biological or psychological reason, but girls are actively coached by social scripts to suppress those urges, while with boys, it's the opposite. Boys are pushed to play sports to make themselves known and apparent. Aggressiveness is cultivated and seen as a positive trait. Girls, on the other hand, are labeled as troublesome and looked down on when they do anything deemed masculine. To put it succinctly, girls are told to suck it up, boys are told to let it fly, and this is a message we carry internally for our whole lives. I mean, that makes sense to me. I will say that boys are told to suck it up in a completely different and in a completely different way. Like, sure. Yeah, we're allowed to show all the rage and wounded pride that we feel, but, you know, sorrow or empathy or nurturing stuff that's kind of, you know, it's the opposite side of the coin. Anything a man does too feminine is, like, you know, very aggressively policed on our side. So, but yeah, put them both together, it's a really fucked up stew. Any thoughts, or should we move on?
Nope, sounds right to me.
Anonymous wrote in and said, I'm one of the people for whom the portrayal of family dysfunction and sharp objects hits close to home, and I wanted to share with your listeners something that's really helped me in my own recovery. Despite its name, The Adult Children of Alcoholics really covers the full spectrum of family dysfunction, whether there's an alcoholic parent or not, and there wasn't in my case. The program and the people I've met there have been invaluable in understanding and healing my childhood trauma, and I'd highly recommend it in addition to professional counseling. I had a friend of mine who went through a different cult growing up than I did, but they did Narcanon, which I think is for families of drug addicts. She said the same thing, that they actually welcome anyone that's dealing with a family type issue like this. It's another resource if people are hurting out there. All right, let's do some fresh feedback here. Murder Bear from the forums. Still slightly confused over Ashley. Was she directly involved in the killings? I first thought she gave up John just so she could maybe get her name in the paper. But now I'm wondering if she either helped or knew Amma did it and lied to help her. Who bit her ear? At first, thought it was Amma and maybe they got into a fight, but hell, maybe it was one of the girls that were killed.
Yeah, a little bit of dry pie there, but as far as who bit her ear, that's a damn fine question.
I think Natalie bit her ear. Because
I think she certainly still could have, yeah.
Like, Natalie's a biter.
Mm-hmm.
So she got bit. But I don't think that...
But not for killing her.
No, I don't think that Ashley and Amma were social contemporaries.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so... and I don't think she was directly involved. Do you think that blood came from her ear?
The blood couldn't have. It was Natalie's. She hit her head on a cinder block, or got hit in the head with a cinder block.
Yeah, and they showed, like, something. They showed in those violent flashbacks, they showed, like, Natalie's face underneath the bed. You could see
with a cinder block right next to her head.
Yeah.
That was where that blood came from. I don't think the bite was the blood.
But that implies that Ashley thought that John did it and then helped him cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, that's crazy. your woman gave you up, dumb fuck. Brian, on the finale podcast for Sharper Objects, can you please explain the connection between Adora's Manchausen by proxy plot and the revelation that Amma killed the girls? Are they completely independent? Am I to assume the show wants me to believe that a group of pretty popular teenage girls in a small community can commit a double murder that the police cannot solve? Maybe that's the case, but I'm struggling to put it together.
They're not completely independent. It shows you the fucked up familial relationship that causes this type of behavior.
Yeah.
Potentially in Amma. But as far as, like, directly connected, yeah, they're not directly connected.
There's an article our pal Joanna Robinson of Vanity Fair interviewed Scanlon, the woman who played Amma, and there's this quote, I think from the book, that to a girl who was weaned on poison, harm is a way of showing care.
Sure.
So, yeah. Like, and I also think they made the point that Amma knew what was going on with her mother. Like, this was some kind of fucked up. So she knew her mom's poisoning her, and she's carrying that secret for all of them. I just think that she got right and wrong twisted up in her head, and thought that this was an acceptable. Like, if you are poisoned by your mother simply for being to make you dependent on her, then what's not acceptable behavior?
Sure.
So it's like, you know, kid gets molested. 3 years later, he goes through puberty and molests another kid. Were those actions connected? Yeah, I think so.
Right. The only thing that makes them look connected here, I mean, is the fact that they happen in the same proximity to each other, right? Because if this happened 20 years later and Amma goes off and kills some people because of the things that happened in her childhood, we wouldn't say, oh, those are directly connected and Adora must have had something to do with them.
Yeah.
We would just say, this is the cause. This is caused by her growing up in this fucked up situation.
Yeah, and it's like you're tempted to, like, start counting up the, you know, how many fucked up angels are dancing on fucked up match heads here. Like, you know, Dora's mom bit her and pinched her awake, and for no reason, apparent reason, would drag her out into the middle of the woods and leave her there. Mm-hmm. Is that better or worse than slightly poisoning your daughters? Is that better or worse than murdering two girls and pulling their teeth out? Like, I'm kind of uncomfortable.
I don't feel that impulse to try and label it better or worse, or to make the tally marks over who's the worst. I'm saying, like, everybody in this family is fucked up because everybody in this family is fucked up.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, they're related for that reason. Yeah. But I think there's just a temptation of, like, well, where did this murder come from? I mean, we're poisoning infants, you know, and squirting shit in their GI tubes, but... I don't know. And, you know, the other thing is, like, you either believe the thesis where Richard says here in this episode that half the town is crazy and evil and we're looking at the wrong half.
Yeah.
You either believe that or you don't. And I felt like the show did a very fine job of having me believe that there would be these women that were this such malignant force, and yet people would alternately put them on pedestals and then vilify them. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at fucking Chief Vickers is like this roiling ball of toxic shame, and you know, about like, you know, like, oh, that Preaker girl's just like her mama, she's plays hard to get, and she does, like, he's just a standard guy, like, extrapolating all women are bad because he met one that rebuffed him. Isn't that weird?
I suppose so.
Like, or there's good girls like his wife who are just kind of like, you know, what is she? She just like, she's what is she to him? You know, is he in love with her? No, but she,
that's the question I have. Like, what,
she makes him breakfast every morning and irons his shirts and says, be safe. That's something. It's more than he gets from what he could get from Adora, but
yeah, it's more than he got on the day that they solved the murders.
But that's like,
or didn't solve the murders, I suppose.
And you know, you got to pay like when Bob Nash is talking about like his daughter and how like he liked her because he could have adult conversations with her, where he, I mean, there's just a lot of weird fucked up men's attitudes about women on display. So like, to me, this is all of a piece. But
yeah.
Jamie T said, I wonder what the cabin in the woods was all about. Was it a red herring, herring, or maybe a murder, potential murder location? It didn't seem to be referenced in the flashbacks.
No, not the cabin directly. I don't know. Like, that's why I say, like, some dots are there, but not all the connections are obvious. And I'm kind of okay with that. Like,
yeah,
it's some fucked up things happened out in those woods, but they didn't directly cause any murders. It's not that black and white in this show, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Jill K says, after that amazing episode of Falling, I had the urge to start the series over again. I rewatched the first episode to look for clues and foreshadowing. The things that stood out to me are, from the finale, you can see the image of Marion in front of the green window fan saying, get up. The series opens with the same image of Marion in front of the fan. When Camille arrives in Wind Gap and parks next to grab one of Natalie's missing posters, it's right at the opening of the alley where her body is found the next day. She pauses and looks down the alley, and the roller skating girls go by. Camille later, unbeknownst to her, interrupts her sister and her friends, goofing around with the memorial flowers and stuffed animals. Anne refers to both Anne and Natalie in the past tense. We knew these girls. Natalie was a sister. Indicating that she already knew that Natalie was dead, not just missing.
Yeah.
I feel like...
That's a light indication, I'd say.
Yeah, because like, I feel like that's a big got you when, like, I'm telling you this, if my boy was missing for 48 hours, I'd start probably referring to him as being gone, because I fucking know that every hour past 24, the chances dwindle to zero. That doesn't mean I don't love my son and want him back, it's just...
Right.
I'm cursed with being a fucking realist. Mm-hmm. And that'd probably make me this like prime suspect at some point too. But the whole dynamic between Camille and Richard is very stark from the beginning. She really wants nothing to do with him and makes a joke about showing him hers to reveal info he's found out. She makes a joke about hitting on John Keane. That's interesting. Like, cause that's literally what happens. Holy shit. I don't know. I feel like watching this show would be rewatching a show would be rewarding. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like I don't need to figure out what I need to figure out to enjoy the show.
No, I think I got the gist of it, which is all the show presented. And I'm okay with that. Why do I need to go back and try and connect all these dots when I understand intuitively that they are connected? Uh-huh. I just may not know the exact connections. That doesn't bother me.
All right. I got two more here. Jamie M. wants to talk more about Manchasm by proxy. You had questions about the feeding tube. One of you remarked how sick Amma must have been to gotten all that poison to need a feeding tube. While this may be true, the greater implication is what the nurse said. The tube is used for the mom to put whatever she wants into the kid's body. In some cases, in real life, the feeding tube has been the kiss of death for those children, as the mom is now able to put as much poison as she wants into the child without them tasting it or refusing to eat. Which, fuck me. God. Adora's mourning. One of you commented about the opposing ideas of Adora poisoning her own kid, but then openly mourning her all these years later. I think that's just part of the Manchasm by proxy. Sharp Objects never shows Adora privately mourning Marion. She's always mourning her in front of others when she thinks she would be likely to gain attention from the sympathy. Perhaps keeping Marion's room unchanged since her death is part of that, too. Anyone who she does allow into the house would see that and may ask questions, and she would get to tell her story all over again. Using that line of thinking, when Adora ran interference in the Mr. Nash Camille interview, was her motive not to protect Mr. Nash, not to protect Camille from doing her job, but to keep this out of the news so their town didn't get statewide attention for something to affect someone other than her in this town?
Hmm. Could be. She is an attention hog. That's for sure.
The other thing about Manchausen is that it is a mental illness, so I suppose that means it's not something that is controlled by the perpetrator, but it feels awful to say that. I would place it in the same mental illness category that perhaps pedophilia is in. It may be beyond the individual's control to an extent, but not acceptable by any means and absolutely needs to be handled criminally if the person is acting on their impulses. In a lot of these cases, it goes unknown because they will often move around a lot and change doctors. In the days before electronic medical records, it would be much harder to spot the patterns, but to make it even more difficult, some of these moms would misspell their last name or give different birth dates or something to change the traceable information a bit. They move to a new town and tell the doctors they aren't going to think a mom is making a serious diagnosis for their kid, that she will know tons of details, including side effects and treatments. New neighbors aren't going to question it either. Yeah, I guess I would like to think that this is harder to do nowadays because, like, wouldn't your doctor want to request your medical records the first time they see you?
Yeah, and it's easy to do that.
And if for whatever reason a parent won't consent to release it, wouldn't that be an immediate red flag?
Mm-hmm.
You would hope, but... finally, Ashaw from the forums. In my opinion, the series was way better than the book. I still think things could have been folded a hair faster, but in general, the pacing on the show was much better. Not to mention Amy Adams, Patricia Clarkson, and Eliza Scanlon are incredible, and the visual style between cinematography and editing was gorgeous. I'm predicting all the miniseries Emmys for this show next year.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I think this probably deserves some of them.
When I think about the differences I know between the book and the show, like the fact that Calhoun Day was an entire thing that was invented for the show, I felt like that did a lot of heavy lifting for what they did in the book, which is have Camille just explain everything that happens in the final, the epilogue.
Uh-huh.
I vastly prefer that. Now, there was one detail that I saw in the books that I liked, which is that the girl that Amma befriended and murdered at the very end had a particular shade of, like, chocolate brown hair that matched a blanket in Camille's bedroom, and Amma was trying to do Camille's bedroom in the dollhouse, and that was one of the first implications that she had murdered her, is that there was a she came up with a blanket that was the exact same shade, implying that she's going
used her hair to
make it. This close to making human lamp fucking shades, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a cool detail, and maybe they're trying to nod to it with the fact that she was thrilled with this blanket or rug or whatever, but but yeah, no, most of the book differences to show seems like they were smooth and more interesting in the show than in the books, so I agree with that. What do you think? I also think that this is going to be a monster at the Emmys.
Yeah.
It's miniseries category, it's HBO, it has two very highly regarded female actors that fucking were throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs and a completely unknown young talent from Australia. Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Amy Adams is probably going to be shoo-in to win, and then pick your poison, Patricia Clarkson or Miss Scanlon for the supporting. So, I don't know. I mean, that sometimes works against people, too, when there's that many strong performances in a single thing.
Yeah, you think? I mean, somebody's got to get cut out.
I mean, it's like I from the first couple episodes, I thought Sophia Lillis would be mentioned too, but like she really that the teenage Camille really fell off, and as the series progressed, and she definitely had important moments, but that was much more of a background.
Yeah.
And like a vital role, because that like Camille unstuck in time was one of the things that made the show so fucking eerie and so visually interesting.
It infers a lot to us about Camille, like what we know about Camille and why she is the way she is. It's largely on the shoulders of those scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I could see like that 30 seconds of her swimming in the lake by the cabin where the boys accost her. Like that could be 5 pages of inner monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it just it does exactly what they needed to do. So yeah, that's all the feedback we have. I thought it's a great series. I'm looking forward to talking about it more, if nothing else, on the Baldies, because I can't imagine that this isn't going to get a lot of attention in our little stupid award show. If you care to give us some feedback that we want to, you know, kind of talk the through, or there's some contrary opinions or whatever, we'll be back next week talking about Castle Rock. But you can send feedback to TV@baldmove.com. And that's where we're going to leave it for now. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.